This is a View from the Bridge official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Tuesday, the 24th of January, 2017, and my name's Patrick Smith. Another 4 points in the bag for the Belfast Giants. Two games, one against the Nottingham Panthers, one against the Dundee Stars, both with the same outcome, a win for the Belfast Giants. We're joined this week by Adam Keefe, the captain of the Belfast Giants, the heartbeat of the team, to talk about the Giants' confidence going into Sheffield next week. Aaron and Davey are coming along in just a minute to look back at those games, and also quite a few things to talk about from around the Elite League. We answer your TFAs and look ahead to those games against the Sheffield Steelers this forthcoming weekend. If you want to get in touch with us, podcast at kingdomofthegiants.com, at AVFTB on Twitter, soundcloud.com/AVFTB for all of our interviews and the likes, and all the usual sort of stuff besides. I'm looking forward to this weekend, but let's get through this week's show first, eh? Okay, well, the Belfast Giants are on one hell of a run of form. It's another 4 point weekend in the books. And yeah, we've got some exciting stuff to talk about. But I'll be joined by two gentlemen. First up, Mr. David McGimsey. How are you, sir?
What about you, mate?
Not too bad, buddy. And back from his healthy scratch off the bench and fresh back from a trip to New York City, Mr. Aaron Kernan. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very well. Thanks. Good to be back. Well, actually, it's not good to be back at all, especially not from this is a city like New York, but I suppose we'll just have to make do.
Was it good fun?
Yeah, great time. Flew by. I was there for 5 days. It felt like about 6 hours. So, yeah, super time.
Did you get a hockey game in?
Yeah, caught the Rangers against the Leafs, which was very enjoyable, especially as the Leafs managed to win 4-2, and deservedly so as well.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, here, let's take you away from those heady heights of that rubbish NHL hockey and bring you back down to earth with a bit of Elite League. The Giants had two games at the weekend, but before we get to those games, we want to come back to one of the points that we spoke about last week. Of course, we talked about the DOPS assessments of the penalties to Gleeson Fournier and Matt Nickerson. The outcome of that was both did not receive a ban, and both were just handed a 5+ game for the incident. Davey, that's a bit different to what we expected.
I think both incidents have been dealt with incorrectly by DOPS, but then nothing, you know, it is a bit of a roulette wheel whenever you put your £250 in and ask for a request. I think that maybe both, certainly the Giants one has been dealt with a... Giants didn't have the request. No, yes, the Giants had the request because it wasn't called on the night, and the Cardiff Devils requested the hit on Nickerson as a bit of an even up. And as I said on Twitter during the week, I think that DOPS sometimes levy some sort of punishment on these so they can get their £250 back, because if they just say no further action, you know, you don't get your money back. And at the end of the day, they can't re-referee games and give a 2-minute minor. But, you know, there's a ref, Dermot Gallagher, goes on Sky Sports News every week and goes through the incidents the weekend and gives his critique on them, whether the ref got it right or whether the ref got it wrong. And I spoke to an ex-official within the Elite League last week after these two officials showed him the video, etc. And he said, 2-minute minor on Nickerson, match penalty for Fournier. So there, all these things are up for individual interpretation. That's the difficulty of maybe DOPS being a one-man band, because I still don't buy into this, that there's 4 or 5 people worldwide looking at this. Just don't buy into it at all. While it's a one-man band, it's one man's opinion. And in this particular incident, I think he's got both calls wrong. But you have to move on and you know, deal the card or take the card you get dealt, you know.
Absolutely. Aaron, any comment on it?
No, I haven't really caught up with this sort of in a way, so we'll just skip this one.
No problem. Well, then let's look ahead. Sorry, let's look back at the two games that the Giants undertook at the weekend, both at the SSE Arena. First up, Nottingham were in town on Friday night, and the Giants, well, they took a 5-4 win. It was a hell of a start for the Giants, only a minute and a half before Jim Vandermeer opened the scoring from Foster and Rutherford. And in that first period, David Rutherford and James Demarai made it 3-0. In the third period, because there was nothing in the second, but in the third period, Brown scored a goal for the Panthers to bring it 3-1. And then Demarai restored that lead. Chris Lawrence pegged us back again. Demarai got his hat-trick before Robert Farmer and Matt Carter made it a bit more exciting towards the end. Carter's goal being scored with only about a minute and a half left in the game. Statistical wise, is that a term? Let's just deal with
it
that.
It is now.
Jackson Whistle was in nets for the Belfast Giants and he made 29 saves and 33 shots. However, for the Nottingham Panthers, Miga Wiekman only lasted 12 minutes and 23 seconds. He was pulled from the game after the third goal. He had faced 10 shots and saved only 7 of them. Henry Passel came in after that. He faced 23 shots and saved 21. The Giants scratch was Jeff Mason and the referee was Steph Hogarth. Davey, a dominant first period from the Belfast Giants.
Yeah, one of those ones. Always good to get an early goal on the board because you get up and that gets the confidence, gets the crowd into it quickly as well. And great take from Vandermeer. A little pass across the ice from Foster after a lot of hard work in the corner from Rutherford, freeing the puck up. And well, Vandermeer goes back across Wiekman's body and Wiekman's, you know, he's onside. He doesn't really see it, to be fair to him. And, you know, that gets us off the perfect start. And maybe for 4 or 5 minutes after that, we kind of trade punches. We're going up and down the ice, and there's opportunities both ways because, like, the Panthers weren't out of this game completely. But the second goal from Rutherford, all hard work, a shot from the point from Foster again. Rutherford chasing into the blue paint, gets the rebound of Wiekman. And, you know, you see at that stage, even maybe a few minutes before that, Wiekman's head is down. His body language is bad. He's every time they're taking a face off, he's looking at the bench, he's shaking his head, whether he doesn't feel that he's getting the defensive backup that he maybe requires, or maybe he's just not feeling it. You know, he's made a good save, a good enough save, kick save off the shot on that second goal, but he's put it right into Rutherford's wheelhouse. Maybe he's thinking that the D should be, you know, covering, stopping that guy attacking the blue paint. Maybe that's the case. And then the Demarai one, once it's gone in, like, you know, I think Wiekman takes himself out of the game more than, you know, than he's pulled by Strachan on the bench. And, you know, at that stage, 3-0 up, and you're thinking good things are going to happen. We'll go into the second period, and the Panthers obviously come out hard, and we'll push them back. We'll push back at them, and it's another good period from the Giants. And then, obviously, when we go in, we've got the fight at the end of the first period, of course, that we never touched on there. Fair play to Brown for stepping up. He puts a big hit in. Keefe doesn't really like it. Asks him, are we going to do this? And the two of them go toe-to-toe, and good respect from both of them at the end. Kiefer knows what Brown's trying to do. He's trying to spark his team. Kiefer's just defending himself. And at the end of the day, we'll go into the third period. It's all tied up. And we got into that. It's a bad habit in sports where, you know, once you take your foot off the pedal, and I think there was an element of that, once you take your foot off the pedal, it's hard to get it going again. Momentum's massive in this game, as we know. And, you know, they came back. We were able to come back with a goal, but they kept coming. Ended up 5-4. Wee bit nervy at the end, but, you know, it's never a bad night when you beat the Panthers and scored 5 goals with a hat-trick hero and James Demarai.
Absolutely. The Aaron, going back, the fight between Keith and Brown, obviously, as Davey says, the Panthers trying to spark something there. Second period, much of it. And then the Panthers really start to get going in that third period. But fair play to the Giants, they were able to deal with it.
Yeah, I think the important thing, you know, if you look, we sort of, well, I mean, the Panthers scored early in the third and it took a while, but it didn't look like there was even much going to happen for the first 10 minutes. Then the Giants got back ahead by the 3 goals. Then all of a sudden, it just seemed to go, I can't remember what it was. I think it was 3 goals in the space of it was 3 goals in the space of a minute and 20 seconds, a couple for Nottingham and one for the Giants in the middle, sandwiched in the middle there. But, I mean, I'm sure, you know, if you look at it, Coach Walser would be absolutely seething at some of the defensive zone coverage in front of Whistle. You know, obviously the Panthers are pushing back, but there's guys wide open standing, you know, 10 feet or whatever, 10 yards, sorry, in front of the net, with all the time in the world to pick their spot and put the puck past, Whistle, who, to be fair to him, you know, early on, and Davey mentioned it there, the game early on was sort of, in the first period was a bit back and forward, and Whistle was as solid as we've come to expect from him. And he certainly, you know, he made some big saves early on there. And I felt almost a bit, I actually felt a bit sorry for him, because I thought he wasn't given much protection towards the end there. And it almost let the Panthers back into it. But thankfully we got the important goals. And I think the important thing was that, you know, that last Demery goal being so quick, after the Panthers had pulled it back sort of to, was it 5-3, or I think it was, or 5-2, just getting straight down the ice and scoring pretty much from the face off, just about, well, it was the game winning goal, but it was probably the most important moment of the game.
It was a game winning goal, and it was only
Paddy, if I can come in on the back of that one. Well, our Achilles heel this season has been not being able to clear our own defensive zone, and I think at times whenever we played that attacking style of hockey, well, not even the attacking style of hockey, the playing on our front foot and playing with confidence, you know, there was none of that really in the first period. We were clearing our zones, we were getting it up off the glass and getting it clear whenever we came into the third period, and we were struggling. And you've seen on Sunday night the same thing happened to Dundee. We kept the puck in the zone, and that puck pressure in zone, and you can't clear it, you're getting tired legs and the puck's bobbling and scrambling. We scored goals like that on Sunday night. The Panthers scored those kind of goals on us on Saturday night. And that's, as I say, that's been our Achilles heel. And once we dropped that intensity, those little errors came in where we weren't clear in our defensive zone. And that's just things that we did differently on Sunday night. We learned lessons, which I thought was really good as well. We learned that lesson that you have to try and play for 60 minutes. Doesn't matter if you're 3 or 4 up. It was a situation where we were against Dundee Stars. We kept going. I think in Stephen Murphy's interview after the game on Saturday night, he mentions, like, you know, for 60 minutes we blocked shots, for 60 minutes we were intense. Whereas we just let that intensity drop ever so slightly for 10 minutes, and a good team like the Panthers are going to come back and jump on top of you. And that's what they did. But we managed, I think it was Derek Walser said after Friday night, you know, the clock won it for us. You know, the clock ticked down just when we were under pressure. Got us out of jail, sort of thing. And we'll come away with a 5-4 win. And you can only say 2 points, tick game off, one game down, 2 points, let's move on.
What I want to do, we'll come back to James Demery when we're talking about the Dundee game, because I want to talk about his weekend as a whole. But also in that game, Davey, I'll stick to yourself, 3 assists to Foster, 2 to Benny. The whole team really chipping in and really playing very well.
I think Brandon Benedict has been on a pretty rich vein of form lately. He was scratched a number of weeks ago. Now, I don't know whether it was an injury or whether it was a healthy scratch. And since then, he's came back with a real spring in his step. And Foster, as we know, over the December month and going through and ending up with the player of the month, he's kicked on again in January, and he's kept that good momentum up that he had through December. He's playing really well. Rudy starting to get back amongst the goal, and he's hammering the blue paint every shift. Something happens when Rutherford's on the ice. You know, he's a little spark plug and he makes things happen. So that line's been really good. As you say, Benny, for me, you know, it should have been on, I think it was Sunday night. You know, I think if Mark Lefebvre's looking for what happened to Joey Side, you know, he maybe needs to check Brandon Benedict's pocket to see if he's still in there.
Absolutely. Well, that game, you want highlights of it, of course, Belfast Giants TV, just like the next night. Looking at some of the, just quickly before we talk about the next night against Dundee, look at a couple of three-word weekends. We got Stevie, Belfast Tail saying, shooting reaps rewards. Leona McClintock, Demery Goldfest. Chris Lovell said, first period domination, obviously that Nottingham game. Stevie Thompson says, ramping it up. Mark Jameson says, Demery has awoken. And Rand Donaldson says, full steam ahead. And we'll go full steam ahead into this game against the Dundee Stars on Saturday night. The Giants obviously looking for a little bit of retribution regards to what happened at the DIA the previous weekend. And by jingo, I'm going to say that, by jingo, they got it. 6-0. A shutout victory for the Belfast Giants. The goal scorers come an absolute cracker from Forney to open the scoring in the first period on the 10, bang on the 10-minute mark. Salviano, Demery again. Chris Higgins with a nice little goal from between the legs on a feed from Forney and Riley. Jonathan Boxhill and Demery scoring his 5th of the weekend and the 6th for the Giants that night to round off the scoring. Stephen Murphy, well, we said it was a shutout victory for the Giants, and he made 17 out of 17 saves. Fallon only lasted 40 minutes, and he conceded 5 goals in those 40 minutes, 26 saves from 31 shots, and he was replaced in the third period by Holland, who made 5 saves from 6 shots. Jeff Mason still on the scratch, and Tom Perring was your referee. And Aaron, as I said, revenge for what took place at the Dundee Ice Arena the previous weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was probably one of the most disappointing results, having got the result the night before against Cardiff. To sort of, you want to follow that up with a win, really. Although we did get the point, and obviously points on the road are always important. But yeah, it was a good chance to face the team again within the space of a week, and it was a totally different outcome. You look back to the Panthers game, and in the first period, the Giants were dominant, and then they let it slip. In this game, they put the foot on the throat, and they just kept pushing until the Stars were suffocated. And some of the goals we scored this night were just, you mentioned most of them there, really, but the Forney goal and the Higgins goal especially, just the way how you even know to pull the puck between your legs and put it sort of through them behind you. I don't know how you work that out and know where you are and know where the net is to make it effective like that. So a superb goal and a well-deserved win. Murph at the back there, a night like that for a goalie, the night before Jackson Whistle was worked quite a bit. He faced quite a lot of shots and he's always in the game. But in a game where you're sort of sat back there, it can be difficult to make the big save if there's a breakdown in front and the Stars come in and you haven't done anything for a few minutes. So it may have only been 17 saves, but it's important to make them there.
It's very rare, Davey, that you get a shutout victory where the man of the match isn't handed to the goalkeeper. But Mike Forney was the man of the match, and he opened the scoring with an absolute screamer.
He stepped into the puck and just absolutely big heavy shot, and it's past Fallon before he blinks. It's one of those great, I'm sure his eyes lit up as the puck was coming to him. He was literally stepping off the bench at the time, and he's just skated into the zone and just, he's give it the hammer. And 1-0, and that opens things up for the Giants then, because obviously the Stars have to play slightly differently. They have to play a little more open than they wanted to. They've came in, they're a little more short bench than us. I think there's three or four players light than a couple of players out injured, and they had a tough travel day. I don't think the boat crossing was the best for them, with talking and dispatches to different people. And they were up against it right from the, as you say, the 10-minute mark. But before that, the Giants, I think, threw 17 or 18 shots, maybe more, at Fallon during the first period. Actually, he was surprised whenever that goal from Higgins went in that wasn't the signal to bring Holland into nets. I thought at that stage Fallon was looking pretty fatigued, but he battled on through to the end of the period, and Holland did very well in the third period. Okay, the Giants maybe kind of sat off a wee bit more in the third period, only six shots after, I think we're 4 or 5-0. It was a 5-0 at the end of the second, so yeah. We definitely didn't have to play with the same intensity, and when the Stars came with a couple of opportunities later on, the Giants were able to see him out. Good to see the that grind line of Kiefer and Toy and Boxall coming up with a goal, nice wraparound there, and always good getting scoring from all over the place at the minute. We could probably do with a bit more scoring from the back end, but Van der Meer comes up with a massive one on the Friday night, and obviously Walser's chipping away the points. I think Jeff Mason's, he knew where he was going to be at the start of the season when he came in. He came in as the extra man, so there's probably not too much complaints from him. I'm sure personally he wishes he was playing. I think him and Quinnell play the same kind of game, but obviously there's the passport issues there where Quinnell holds the Italian, the European passport. So we've got the size and Martinelli, Nickerson, we've got and Van der Meer, so they stay. You've got Walser who obviously stays. So you kind of toss them between Quinnell and Mason there. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought there. But Mason has played very well over the last kind of 10 games. So if he's required, he'll fit in seamlessly into the team there. But we're healthy at the minute. Well, as healthy as a hockey team's going to be in January, coming towards February. People are going to be playing with knocks. People are going to be playing, taking the odd jab or, so you've got to mitigate. If you see somebody over the next couple of weeks, just don't automatically think that they're swinging the lead or whatever. Boys are probably playing down on par at times, but we're coming up with big results. Weekend is massive coming up. But you go back, 4 points is all you can do. You can only beat what's put in front of you. It wasn't a great performance from the Dundee Stars. You go back over the other five games that we've played them this season, been much tighter. I don't think that Mark Lefebvre will be particularly happy with the performance, but it is what it is. As said at the start, they're down a few bodies, difficult travel day, bit of mitigation for them, but a good solid win for the Belfast Giants. That's what we should be doing, with the greatest respect on these Stars down near the bottom of the league, struggling with form, struggling with bodies. you need to be putting teams away 6-0 like that. So credit the guys, did what they had to do, come away with two good points.
It'd be interesting, like, regards to, you mentioned there Jeff Mason and Quinnell having the passport. With Jeff Mason in the year served in Belfast, being married to a local girl and whatever, the whether his passport situation could change to allow him to have that ability or that sort of qualification also. But yeah, I agree. I think it was more, come back to the game, I thought it was a pretty much dominant affair from the Belfast Giants. It seems that we were all over the Dundee Stars. And like you say, Davey, you know, we had 17 shots in the first, 14 shots in the second, but then we let on only 6 in the third. One power play, one goal. Dundee had 3 power plays and no goals. And, but let's come to the man of the moment, James Demarai. 2 goals in that night, 5 over the weekend. We spoke, and this is credit where it's due, because we spoke a number of weeks ago where we were getting disappointed at guys who weren't hitting the back of the net. Natural goal scorers, and we mentioned the likes of Forney, and we mentioned the likes of James Demarai, and how they we needed to rely on them finding the net, and they weren't finding the net. This weekend, and of late, they really are finding the net.
Yeah, it's the depth that, you know, when one line's not been clicking, others have been taking up the slack more recently, and you can see it in the results. You know, we're not relying upon, you know, 3 guys to, you know, 1 to score and a couple to set them up, and it's a massively important thing in helping to build that momentum as we get into sort of the run in the league. You know, James Demarai, we saw it last year. You know, we saw that what he could do in this league. We saw him popping, I can't remember how many goals he scored. 20-odd goals last season. Last season, he had spells where he maybe didn't score as often as well. But this year, you know, he certainly hasn't been shy. He's been putting the work in. He's been getting around the net, and he maybe just hasn't had the puck luck that he would have wanted. And he's got the reward there this weekend for the work that he's been putting in. And he's, I think, doubled the number of goals he'd scored in the league in one weekend. It'd be good if he could do that again this weekend.
Davey, goal scorers, obviously Demarai with the 5. And also, one of the other things I want to mention is that the goal that we saw quite a bit on social media through the week, and the little through the legs from Chris Higgins, and the reaction from Blair Riley, he was absolutely astounded by it.
Yeah, I think nothing really that Higgy does on the ice comes as much of a surprise anymore. You know, you even heard during the commentary the likes of Shane Johnson getting so excited by it. That's what you want as a hockey fan. You want somebody to get you out of your seat, and that's what Chris Higgins does. And he gets his teammates out of their seat or off the bench, you know, because they don't know what he's going to do, whether it's a deke round a D-man or just undressing somebody or getting a goal or coming up with a cheeky wee finish like that. He'll have known what he was going to do before that puck got this stick. You know, he knew where his body position was. Fallon was on the deck. Ultimately, it wasn't a particularly difficult finish for him when you've got that kind of skill set. So, you know, credit to him. But back to Desi. Desi has been warming up nice since sort of, I would say, the start of December. You know, I think he's about 15 points in his last 10 or 11 games. And, you know, that started just coming up to Christmas there. Start of December, as I say, his form was really, really starting to warm up. And he got a lot of knockers this season. And there was times on the podcast as well that, you know, we discussed, were we expecting more out of him? Probably on the back of an incredible season last year, where he came in and was MVP of the team, you know. And okay, he's come up to December and he's barely got a goal. So, you know, the criticism was out there, and he's really knuckled down, and he seems to have got that pace, a little yard of pace going. He's playing with confidence, and, you know, how much hockey's confidence. And when you get opportunities, I think it was David Rutherford was on the show the other week. He says, if you're not getting opportunities is one thing, but when you're getting opportunities, you're getting looks, and eventually, you know, the puck will go in. It was one of those things, you know, and it's not, well, let's not call him Sean Sutter, you know, flat track bully. Hat trick against the Panthers. He scored against the Steelers the weekend before. You know, he's came up with goals against the Brayhead Clan, top of the Gardner Conference. So it's not like he's just, you know, chipping these goals in all against the Edinburgh Capitals. So, you know, credit to him. He's stuck at it. He's worked hard. His teammates have stuck with him. That line is getting better and better as well. All the lines at the minute just seem to have a little click and they get on the ice, and that's all down to confidence.
I think for the first 2 periods against the Nottingham Panthers and the entirety of the game against the Dundee Stars, that line with Demarai was clicking really, really well. I thought Sheds had a great weekend also. You know, you saw, like, at one point between the two of them, it was the two of them vying to see who could put the puck in the net quick enough. You know, it was Demarai that got there. But yeah, we seem to have a team that are really clicking well at the minute. It's great to see the likes of Demarai scoring so many. It's great to see the likes of Forney scoring a belter going.
I'm going to jump in there because we're all talking about the finish from Higgins. We're all talking about Demarai getting a hat trick. One of Desi's goals on Saturday night comes from a pass from Colin Sales, where for all the world, he shoots it. And just that steady eye, just a pass right into the crease, empty net for Demaré. And it's the subtle things that I love as a hockey fan, and it's a subtly fantastic pass. So, you know, that, as you've already said, that line, Saviano comes up with a cheeky goal off Fallon's back as well.
Yep.
Confidence, you know, and I'll go back there again. I just think a team that plays with confidence, to play with a certain swagger, and I think our team at the minute has that bit of swagger going.
Absolutely. The highlights from this game are available on Belfast Giants TV and the Belfast Giants website. One thing I asked on Twitter earlier on today, the Giant decision. Yeah, first of an infrequent poll, let's say. If things are going well, I'll put something like this out. well, which of these was your Belfast Giants weekend highlight? And the four options I give you were 5 goals for Demaré, the Murphy shutout, Higgins' goal against the Stars, or down goes Brown. And that's the fight between, obviously, between Adam Keefe and Jeff Brown. Aaron, of those four, what would have you picked?
I think you have to go with the Higgins goal, really, I enjoy whenever people show other people up with a bit of cheekiness and a bit of skill.
And what about yourself, David?
I'll have option 6, Paddy, which was 2 points against my most hated, you know, rivals, the world champions elect, came to Belfast. I think this makes us the de facto champions of the world now, but we'll not put a banner up just yet. And 2 points.
Well, on. When it comes to your good sales, the good listeners and followers of at AVFTV, you chose overwhelmingly with 62%, you chose 5 goals for James Demaré. So thanks to everybody who got involved in that. Right. Let's move ahead, gentlemen. We got this week's interview. He's thrown down the gloves a few times in the last few weeks, and since we last had him on the podcast, he's taken the great Paxton Schulte's mantle of the leading penalty miss taker for the Giants. So I thought it was round about time we caught up with the captain, Adam Keefe. And I started by asking him, you know, with the way that things are going for the Belfast Giants, the results we've had in the last few while, confidence really must be sky high in the locker room.
Yeah, definitely. I think, we made it well known that you can kind of make or break your season in December, especially with the schedule we had. And we want to make it a point to come out, closer to the top of the league than the other way around, obviously, at the end of December. And we did that, you know, we had that big stretch of wins there. And we wanted to keep it rolling in January. And, you know, for the most part, we've done that. They had that one slip up there in Dundee and, but I thought the guys responded well last weekend with another 2 big wins. So, this is obviously, every weekend we look at it, it's the next biggest weekend of the year. So, and this one coming up is no different.
What jump starts a run like that? Because early on in the season, obviously, it was a bit hit and miss, a bit of inconsistent form and trying to find. And every time we spoke to one of you guys or spoke to Derek Walser or spoke to Steve Thornton, said, you know, you're only just something away from kickstarting a run. And they're absolutely right. So what do you think it was kickstarted that run?
Well, I think, there's no mistakes. This league is a tough league to win consistently in now. With the way that it's grown over the last couple of years, teams are going to lose. And I think, our struggles early were maybe just trying to find that right line combinations and guys gelling. And I think that now you're starting to see, some parity around the lineup and the lines are starting to click. And, if there's one line not scoring one game, we're getting production from another line. And, I think that's kind of what's clicked over December there, and we're just riding it out right now and hopefully keep on trucking.
You mentioned that game against Dundee last week and having to respond in this weekend when you're up with 4 points against the Nottingham Panthers and Dundee Stars, and it seems that you guys have a great atmosphere. Obviously, when you're winning, there's a great atmosphere in the room, but you need only to see how Blair Riley's responding to goals through the legs by Chris Higgins, and it seems to be a really good atmosphere in the room.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we're a tight-knit group in there, and that's something you always want to build, and that's something that we try to build through recruitment as well. We bring in good people that are going to enjoy being around each other and want to win for each other. And I think you see that there with the Blair Riley and the Chris Higgins. Those guys really enjoy playing together. That whole line, mm-hmm. and you know, the game that we come out of with a loss in Dundee, you know, Blair Riley stepped up and, you know, he put the whole team on his shoulders and got us that one point, you know. So, you know, there's countless guys stepping up and you know, doing that, those things that are, you know, it's contagious around the dressing room, and every night somebody else wants to step up and be the hero, and that's what you want going forward.
What about your own game this season, mate? Obviously, unfortunately, the points haven't been as forthcoming as they have been in past seasons, but you've definitely got the leadership role there, and we see you going toe-to-toe with the likes of Brown at the weekend and not afraid to step forward and get that team going. Are you happy with your game?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd love to play more. I mean, I think everybody wants to play more and get more ice time, but, you know, I'm when we're winning, I'm happy to take a back seat and just do the little things and you know, whether that's a fight here or there or finish my hits or just try to create energy whenever I do get on the ice. You know, those are the things I'm willing to do. I just want to be part of the team and help the team grow and ultimately bring home trophies. I think, you know, if a guy like me is on the fourth line and I'm not playing very much, you know, maybe it's a good thing that, you know, the lines ahead of us are doing that well, that, you know, like I said, you know, we're happy to take a back seat and whenever we're called on to just to step up and do the job.
Of course, your captaincy stretches a lot more beyond, a lot further beyond your role on the ice, off the ice. You've done some brilliant work always with lads like Tom Simpson, with Blake, with Dylan. You seem to love that aspect of your role in the club.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that I really took on board when I came here. I think in North America, your career is pretty selfish and you're worried about getting to that next level. I think over here, you know, it's something that I took on when I came here. And I recognized, you know, the kind of tight-knit group that the Giants organization and the fan base has. And it's something that I wanted to give back to the community and help be a part of, you know, bringing fans together and creating that family atmosphere at the arena. And I think for the most part, you see that whenever I'm involved in any type of fundraising, you know, the fans are amazing with the way that they support all the different charities and all the different fundraisers and you know, the kids who maybe aren't so fortunate. And I'm not going to always be able to help kids in the way that we do here with the Giants. So I think, you know, while I recognize that my clock is ticking here as a player, so it's when any time I can give back to those kids and help put a smile on their face, even for just a moment, then I'm going to do that. So, you know, I'm always looking for kids that that are like that and could use that help or maybe that smile. And so, you know, that's something we enjoy doing. And it's not just me; it's you know, multiple guys in the team and everybody. Nobody, if you ask them to take some photos or, you know, entertain the kid for 10 minutes while they come in and meet the team and watch us practice, you know, everybody's on board and everybody really enjoys that. So it's just a great thing to be involved with, and it's a great thing that the organization does and allows us to do.
Fantastic. And you mentioned there, you know, your own clock is ticking as a player. Hopefully it doesn't stop too soon. But one of the things that everybody or a lot of people talk about, I'll put you a little bit on the spot here, is coaching. Obviously you've got a coaching role within the Belfast Giants, but when those skates do go up, do you see yourself as a future coach of the Belfast Giants?
Well, I would love to. I mean, I think, you know, it's something that it's not an easy job, and you know, it's something I've really enjoyed the last 2 years here, you know, under Walser, and you know, watching the things that he goes through and learning with him and learning under him. You know, he's come a long way over the last 2 years as well, and he keeps getting better as a coach. And it's nice to see, and it's also nice to be involved with the other side of the game and start to look at the game differently than you do as a player. You know, when you're on the bench as a player and, you know, you're kind of more thinking about your job and not really what's happening in the game sometimes. And I think if you take a step back from it and you really watch the game, you see it in a different light, and, mm-hmm. and you start to see, different things that you're used to seeing as a player. There's been times when I've been scratched or injured and have stepped behind the bench, and it's not an easy job, but, it's one of those challenges that I'm definitely interested in. And it's great to be involved in the game, especially when you're done. And, if that's my avenue, then definitely I'd like to take it whenever, I hang up the skates.
And give your brother a run for his money?
Yeah, he's, I think it'll be... a little ways away from me, but I enjoy speaking to him and picking his brain as well. If there's something that we're struggling with here, and I think that he can offer some help to us, I definitely speak to him and get his opinion on things. And he's been through every different level now in the last 4 or 5 years, so he's obviously a wealth of knowledge for me to pick on and to help with Wally. And Wally's got a big job, and he's got a lot of things on his plate. So anything that I can take off that plate and help out with in terms of the coaching side of it, it does nothing but help us. So,
well, as captain, as coach, and as a team, you got the Sheffield Steelers this weekend in Sheffield in two. Well, to be fair, I know the fans are excited and see them as massive games. Maybe of late, our results coming out of the Sheffield Arena haven't been that great, but this weekend is a massive one for the team and for that league title chase.
Absolutely, but we do say that every weekend, and we don't want to stress too much on the importance of the weekend. Guys understand, it is what it is, and we're going to go there and we're going to try and win the first game, and that's all you can do. Not worry about the total package of the weekend. We got to go there and we got to do a job on the first night, and then we'll worry about the second night when it comes. I think it's important to go in there and have a big start. Them in their arena, they're always good and they're always strong at home. So we're going to have to come out hard and push their pace and maybe dictate the play early on. And then we'll see where we are at the end of the first and just keep on going. That's how we have to go into this game and worry about it from the start of the game and not worry about, Sunday and what's happening in Cardiff or whatever. We got to go into Sheffield and do the job.
Thanks very much, as always, to the captain, Adam Keefe. He did mention there, just a bit of a thing for those that don't know, because we did mention his brother there. His brother, for those that don't know, is Sheldon Keefe, who is the head coach of the Toronto Marlies in the AHL. And a head coach who's doing fantastically well. And Davey, by the sounds of things, it's the way that Kiefer wants to go himself.
Yeah, I don't think it's been any secret over the last number of years that when Kiefer hangs up the gloves on the skates, that he wants to stay involved in the game. Should that be through coaching or a head coaching position? Sure, you'd never know where he could pop up in the future. And he's obviously been involved in the coaching setup now for a number of years with the club in an assistant role. I think that started really under Eddie's stewardship when Kiefer was brought into the boot room, as Robert would call it, It's reaping rewards for him. And yes, he's disappointed he's not getting the ice time, but over the last number of weeks as well, he's really stepped his game up. It was almost like at the start of the season, he was working through it, working through what his new role was. And all of a sudden he's, Toey and Boxy and Kiefer have kind of found their groove, they realize that they're not going out there every fourth shift and they're not going to be getting 60-second shifts. And, they're out there to do a job. They're out there to grind. They're out there to try and leave the puck in the opposition half of the ice when they go for their line change, and don't give up goals, and they're doing that more often than not. When I look at their plus minuses there over the last certainly over the last 6-8 weeks, it's changed from what it was at the start of the season. Their roles changed. I think they're understanding more of what's expected of them, and they're doing a really good job. But Kiefer, the guy has, I hate to use the term bleed teal because it bugs me, but, that's the kind of thing he's done. He's been a great ambassador for this city, but on the ice, he's exceptional. Over the period of time that he's been at this club, every other club would bite your arm off, no pun intended, Manchester, would bite your arm off to get involved or have Kiefer in their roster. Used to go to the Big Blue Tent and have the likes of John Jones and all trying to talk the keeper afterwards and go, will you sign for Cardiff? You know, there was plenty of times standing outside that locker room where Cardiff Devils fans were near on bended knee. Yes, they give him the bird when he was on the ice, they give him the donkey, they give him everything. But once he was off the ice, the respect that he's held, and especially in Cardiff, I've seen it there more than any other arena. It's incredible for a visiting player to be held in such esteem. And I think the likes of Johnny Jones and all would be honest enough to say that he would have been a kind of missing piece that they had during the Pope era or the Reagan era that could have really spiced it up after Vother left. And, you know, I'm glad we've had him in you know, a Belfast Giants uniform, and let's hope he can round the season out with some great success.
Not just in Cardiff, mate. I've seen Coventry Blaze shirts with Key 47 impressed on the back, you know. That's how much of them. Aaron, you know, and just quickly yourself, you know, the captain, as he's both captain on and off the ice, you know, leads on the ice and with the stuff he does off the ice, like I said, Dylan and Blake and Tom and all the charities and the community work. He really is a leader in this team.
He is, and you know, you mentioned how he surpassed, Paxton Schulte's penalty minute record. I would say he might even have surpassed Paxton Schulte in what he's done in Belfast. You know, the time he's been here and the work he's done, and I know that there's going to be people who might come back on that, but it's longevity. Paxton is a great guy and put the franchise on the map, but Kiefer's sort of taken that on a step and kept it there and brought us back. You know, we've had our low moments over the years and now we're probably in as good a position as we've ever been, and a lot of that's been led by what he does.
Absolutely. And as I said, he mentioned himself, he feels that that the clock is ticking on his playing career. We just hope that it doesn't count down too soon. Right, let's look around the league, gentlemen. Dops, as we always start. Automatically reviewed this week, Manchester Storm's Eric Nielsen's match penalty for engaging with spectators during Saturday's game against the Five Flyers. We'll come back to that later on. I want to talk to that about that. Cardiff Devils, Joey Martin got 5+ game for checking to the head during Saturday's game against the Coventry Blaze. That will be automatically reviewed and will probably come out on Wednesday. And the Sheffield Steelers have requested a review on Cardiff Devils' Andrew Hotham following Sunday's game. I'll not ask about these gents because I'm just going to batter ahead.
Go for one of them, the Joey Martin incident.
You know, Joey Martin?
The Joey Martin one's the only one I've seen. And unfortunately for Steph O'Garthy, he's got it really badly wrong. To be fair to him, he's not in a great position when it comes in, but it's shoulder to shoulder. There's absolutely no chance of, like, I say that again, there's no chance of Dobbs doing anything. There's obviously a chance of Dobbs giving him like a 10-match ban, but for me, it's shoulder to shoulder. And unfortunately, Hogarth's just got the call slightly wrong on the night. And I think it's more the way that Martin's arm flies up after the check, but it's pure shoulder to shoulder. It's a good clean contact.
Okay. Of course, the results will come out probably Wednesday evening, as they tend to do. Looking around the league and the results that took place this weekend, it was a 3-day Scottish road trip for the Storm, and really not a pleasant one in all sorts of ways. A 2-1 defeat to the Clan, a 4-3 overtime defeat to the Flyers, and they finished with another defeat, this time to the Caps 2-1. Added to that, you have the incident we mentioned with regards to Dobbs earlier on, and Eric Nielsen having an altercation with a fan who, by all accounts, was doing his best to provoke the action that he got from the Storm's talisman. So the Storm came back down the M6 with only 1 point and a few wounds to lick. Aaron, I'll start with yourself with regards to the Storm. Not a great road trip for them, and obviously you've got the incident regarding Nielsen, and we all know that Fife's a hostile place.
Yeah, oh, Fife is, it's, I hope there's no Fife listeners. It's a grim place to go, but it's kind of fun. In a way, you know, it's a real old fashioned, well, in more ways than one, I suppose it's physically very old, but, you know, it's an old fashioned, angry place to go and watch a game. And, you know, I've been a couple of times and I know you were with me, certainly one of them, the atmosphere in the place, the way that they, you know, I'll never forget the abuse that Mel Engelstad got when we were there many years ago. People waving 10-point notes and all sorts at him. So yeah, you know, it's a kind of place where they can rile people up. Unfortunately, you just have to, you can't react to it in the way that Nielsen did. You know, certainly by all means, if you really want to, you know, have a word or two, but to physically react, I suppose everyone's human, and you know, I've had the pleasure of meeting Nielsen a couple of times, and he's a very well-spoken, intelligent kind of guy, and he comes across very well. But obviously, he's got that side as well. You know, he's got to have that side in the game for the role he plays. And someone's obviously pushed the wrong buttons there, and he's reacted. And part of it, I guess part of it, you know, in that old rink, there's no plexiglass behind the benches. So the opportunity is there for those things to escalate, unfortunately. But we'll see what happens. I suspect it could be a fairly long ban for him, which is a shame because he's not long back from a pretty bad injury as well. And obviously, you know, Manchester looking to solidify a place in the top eight and coming back with 1 point there is maybe not what they would have wanted from that trip.
Definitely not. Davey, the incident now, you know, Fife, by all accounts, the Fife fan was pretty relentless in what he was doing at the behind the bench at Manchester, and eventually Eric Nielsen cracked and engaged the fan. To what extent, well, the video will tell and Dops will assess. We know that, like I say, as Aaron said, it's a atmospheric rink. I remember, I wonder if television's Neil the Coach Russell, Formulas Parish, used to say on this very show that he loves that place with regards to the atmosphere. I wonder, has his opinion changed on that?
I would say so. I think you've got to look at this in two different ways. The Fife needs sanctioned and sanctioned harsh. Agreed. Now, should that be as draconian as a deduction in points? Because this league is 10 years enough without fining people financially. The teams don't have it, so I don't think we can go down that route. Something has to change. This isn't the first incident. It won't be the last if things don't change. And I think if you did a quick survey of guys who go in there and sit on that bench, or coaches or assistant coaches, they would tell you that it's probably the worst league in, or the worst rink in the league for terms of altercation, stroke, physical, stroke, you know, interaction with the fans there. Take that aside. That has to be dealt with, and dealt with strongly, one, by the league, and two, by Fife. They have to put in procedures now, this week, that can't happen again. Should it mean that they can't have people sitting in that front row of seats? They lose that revenue. That's up to them. Sticking a board up between them, you know, a bit of plexi needs to go up in there. Something has to separate the playing bench from the fans, because you've seen the incidents now. There's been more than one. But you take that aside, that has to be dealt with by the league and by Fife. Two, Nielsen is in the wrong here. He's been provoked. No doubt about it. You can mitigate all you want for it. But unfortunately, he has reacted, and he's, you know, he's pushed, hit, stroke, whatever. He's got involved with a fan. And for the league to turn around and say, you know, if Dops, for example, turn around and don't make an example of him, it sends a bad message. Somebody pushed a linesman. I can't remember who it was. It was a Brayhead player.
It was Corey Carrick.
Pushed a lino. Now give him a good, decent old shove. Got a 6-game ban.
Yeah.
You hit a member of the public, no matter what the provocation was, because you could say that the linesman provoked Kyle. Didn't matter. 6-game ban. Doesn't matter what the provocation was. You can't put your hands on an official. You can't put your hands on a member of the public. Doesn't matter what the provocation is. That's at a point, if it's getting that bad, and it was obviously a build-up. It wasn't just a fan just out of the blue ran over, poured a beer over, hit him, whatever. That had been building and building and building.
Yeah. You've
got to report that to the referee and the linesman or the club officials, and you say, you know, we're taking our players back to the dressing room here. We're stepping off the... You can't get involved with fans. I feel sorry for Nielsen that he's been put in this position. He's been put in this position by Fife and by the league, because the league haven't stamped down on him soon enough. But I think the league will send out a bad message if they don't stamp down on it, but that remains to be seen.
I think, yes, I fully agree with you. I think 100% there has to be, on both sides, there has to be action to basically make an example of the incident and to say that, you know, you just can't do it from both sides. Is that a deduction of points? Hurt Fife where it really hurts? They've climbed, we're going to talk in a second, they've climbed into fourth position. Do you take the points off them? Do you deduct them 4 points to say, you know, and if your fans continue to do this, send a message to the fans, if you continue to do this, you'll actually start hurting the progress of the team. Therefore, the action has to be taken by the team. Otherwise, they're going to lose and lose again. And likewise, Nielsen, no doubt, has been provoked because of how Fife is so intense, how Fife is so, intimidating. And no doubt it went on and on and on. And he snapped and he's went back and, you know, I don't know whether it was a punch. I don't know whether it was a shove. I don't know, but he's engaged the fan in a physical way. And that has to be a suspension. No, he served a one-match suspension for the match penalty, and we're seeing an automatic review of that. We'll hear from Dobbs' name, but that has to be something more. But would it... My problem when I'm thinking about it is the fact that we see a number of seasons ago, Corey Nielsen puts a puck in the crowd at Brayhead and gets absolutely nothing. You know, Corey Nielsen came out and apologised to the fan, apologised for doing it, but there was nothing about putting a fan in danger. And we've seen time and time again that Dops sometimes don't come up with anything for this. And if, you know, but hopefully, this incident will be made an example of, and it'll send out a public message right around the league, that this sort of incident, as unsavoury as it is on both sides, just will not be tolerated.
Can Dobbs do anything? Can the league, you know, putting out a strongly worded PR, putting out a strongly worded statement saying we're going to deal with it, is that enough just to put out a statement and say we're going to deal with this? Fife have been told to deal with it. Nielsen's been censured for his actions, but, you know, as far as it goes, he served his ban. Is that enough? You know, from your perspective, from Aaron's perspective, you know, I don't feel personally that it is. I feel sorry that Nielsen has been put in that position by Fife and by the league for their inaction up to now. But I still don't think that mitigates for putting your hands on a fan, no matter what the provocation. Unfortunately, we've obviously seen incidents in the past. Rob Ray, Ty Domi have got into altercations with fans. Slightly different circumstances where, you know, the Ty Domi one, the fan has ended up in the penalty box with him. Rob Ray's went hat stand on the ice with a guy. So, you know, slightly different situations. But I just think that we're treading a very fine line here with regards to what's acceptable and what the league are trying to put forward as, you know, the product that they're trying to put out there. It's a difficult one.
This is a public event involving a member of the public. So this is a publicly visible event involving a member of the public, and it has to be made an example of. Now, what little credibility that Dops has left and what little credibility that the Elite League would have left, they need to just basically say, no, this doesn't happen. Fife, you do not let this happen. Nielsen, you do not react. And censure both of them accordingly. But we'll see when the results come out what we'll get from that. Let's move on, gentlemen. 4 point weekends were not exclusive to the Belfast Giants this week. The Brayhead clan followed their home win over the Storm by travelling to Ice Sheffield, where they took 2 points in overtime over the Steelers. And likewise, we've just talked about in Fife, added to their overtime points from the Cheshire coach trip crew, with a win over the Nottingham Bears in the Bear Pit. They pegged the whole team back twice before leaving Nottingham with the points after a shootout. Gents, the Gardner Cup side's picking up the points and Fife, you know, Davey, we just talked about him there, but Fife are sitting in fourth.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that the Brayhead clan have had a real funny season in so much as, you know, they've really dominated that conference and they haven't really picked up very many cross-conference points. And, you know, Fife don't really, I think, you know, Brayhead are going to go on there and win that conference and obviously then take the second seed in the league, which is going to be funny that Fife could finish above them in the league and finish below them in the playoffs. You know, that would be the case, wouldn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so you know, that's just one of the slight anomalies. But Fife, you know, the everything starts in between the pipes for them. Owen's had a fantastic season for them, and that sets them up week in, week out for to go and get these good results. You know, they've been a handful for us. The last time we played them, we lost to them, so in overtime. So, you know, they're no mugs, and going forward, I'm not sure whether we're finished with Fife or not, or we've got another game against them.
We do have another game against them.
So, you know, they're got to be taken seriously, but, you know, they're well up the standings. It's good to see Gardner Conference teams up towards the top end of the league.
Yeah, Aaron?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's obviously why part of the reason, you know, obviously travel was one, but that's part of the reason that the conference system was brought in, was to give the, you know, these teams a bit more of a chance to be competitive, and it's obviously working out. But who knows, that may all change, I suppose, with something we'll talk about, I think, a bit later on in the show.
Yeah, Cardiff and Coventry battled it out in the Sky Dome. The Devils coming from behind to beat the Blaze 7-5. But Coventry bounced back on Tayside. Signer Stewart Almeida and Bergman scoring one apiece in a 4-0 shutout of the Stars. A hard weekend for Mark Lefebvre. 10 conceded, 0 scored. Signer and I always get this wrong. Almeida, they've really turned the fortunes of the Blaze. And for two guys that came in late this season, they're already they're in the top scorers for the Blaze for the entire season. So they're doing really well. But the final game to talk about is the Devils-Steelers game at Ice Arena Wales. A game all Giants fans had their eye on. The Devils were 5-0 up in the series against the Steelers. However, this, in their sixth matchup of the season, Paul Thompson's side were finally able to get a victory. 4-3 with Fredder getting the game-winning goal. Aaron, was that the best outcome for the Giants?
Yeah, I think what you don't want between the teams that you're competing against is three-point games, and you don't want both sides gaining a point in these. So having one team sort of claim the victory is important, because you really want to cut it from, I suppose, a three-point race to a two-point race as soon as possible. So hopefully this is maybe a step in the right direction for that.
David?
Yeah, I think that's a tough one as well, because I actually think the Sheffield Steelers are in a pretty good place as well. You know, they've a couple of games back there, and that makes this weekend even bigger than it possibly already is on paper. You know, they seem to have a bit of Cardiff's number at time this season, so I think they've got to play them again a couple of times as well. They're not finished with Cardiff, so it's so tight at the top now. That result in terms of tightening everything at the top of the league up and giving us an opportunity to go top of the league with a win, you know, before Cardiff play again. You know, that was what we really wanted. As long as it wasn't a 3-point game, as Aaron has already said there, I think that was key as well. So, you know, it just tightens things up. I don't think it was good or bad whether Cardiff or Sheffield won, because I think come the end of the season, all three are going to be nip and tuck.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, looking at the league table, Cardiff are still leading the way, but that lead has been cut right back. They've played 34 games of 51 points, and the Giants are only 1 point behind. But granted, they've played one game extra, 35 games, 50 points. Sheffield, 3 points further back, 33 games played, 47 points. And as I just said, Fife, they're in fourth, 33 played, 38 points. Nottingham behind them, also in 38 points, but fewer regulation wins. And then Brayhead in 36 points, Manchester in 30 points, Coventry in 29, Dundee in 26, and propping up the table, the Edinburgh Capitals, 32 games played, 23 points. Now, other news. News was released soon after we recorded last week's podcast that the Guildford Flames have applied to join the Elite League. Now, the two-time BNL and four-time EPIHL champions have widely been regarded as the most likely to make the step up. And with the EPIHL in a little bit of a turmoil, we've seen in recent weeks the exclusion of Telford and Manchester from their forthcoming playoffs as an example, it appears the Flames management, Sport Fact Limited, have decided to take that step up. Now, the actions require ratification by the board at the next meeting, but it appears very likely that the application will be successful, and therefore, with Milton Keynes also joining, the Flames will be the 12th team to join next year's EIHL. Obviously, the conferences, Aaron, will have to change. There's been talk. We heard Todd Kellman speaking during the week in a 43-minute interview with Rob McGregor. It's not like Todd Kellman to ramble on for a while, but a 43-minute interview. But in that interview, which was excellent, he talked about the possibility of 2 6-team conferences, but there's also maybe a possibility of 3 4-team conferences.
Yeah, I guess it depends on, you know, obviously the maths a wee bit. You wonder how many do they want to keep it as is at the minute, with, was it 54 games, I think, isn't it, in the regular season? Do they want to adjust that a bit and maybe lengthen the playoffs? Do they want to adjust it? And, you know, that'll be part of it. And then the travel aspect as well, you know, the geographical breakdown. You have 3 teams of 4, you know, I can see, you know, the Scottish teams going into one, and then you've probably got, you know, you could probably shoehorn Belfast, Cardiff, Nottingham and Sheffield into one, which would certainly, you know, keep Nottingham and Sheffield won't want to give up on playing as many times against each other as possible. And then that leaves you with, is it Guildford, Milton Keynes, Coventry, and Manchester. And that probably is a bit easier. You know, geographically, I suppose Manchester would maybe be in there instead of Cardiff, but that'd be a pretty tough one for a team that's just trying to get its foot in at the minute still. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what way they go, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of debate and discussion around it, and people will be happy and pissed off, whatever way they fall.
Interested in being Guildford, Davey. You know, obviously Guildford are relatively a successful franchise in the EPIHL. They're also not a, I'll put it quite bluntly, they're not a poor franchise. You know, Sportfact itself is, I think it's John Hebburn, the guy who's Morgan Stanley investment banker. And he was at one point, if I can remember correctly, one of the original directors of the Elite League when it was first being set up. You know, they've got a decent bit of financial backing behind them. They've got a good crowd. They've got a good rink at the Spectrum. That's a team who can come into this league. And it's not like, with all due respect to the likes of Fife and Dundee, you know, when they came in and they were propping up the table, a team like Guildford could feasibly come in and compete.
As you said there, Paddy, yeah, that you know, money's key, and you know they can build a decent roster there with what's available. Milton Keynes as well going to come in. They've got experience there as well. I think Lee Jamieson's still with them. That'll be right. So you know they're going to have players that have played in the top league as well. Interesting to see whether he'll step back up with them or whether you know the EPL looks like it's doomed. So you know it's kind of going to be the only show in town for him. So you know, I expect that's good. You know, league expansion is good if it's sustainable. Let's hope that nothing drops out the other end either, you know, in the likes of Edinburgh. Obviously, we monitor that situation on a year-by-year basis. So at least it's an even number. It was going to be complicated if it was just going to be the one team, Milton Keynes. Guildford coming in, I think, is a good thing. Remains to be seen whether, maybe not the start of next season, but going forward, will any other teams from the EPL try and make the jump? And then you're getting into a very big league. You know, you're getting into potentials of 16 teams, and then if you've got two leagues of eight, you know, and promotion, relegation, all sorts of things that could happen. And you know, it's good for the future of hockey if you know that's the one governing body thing. You know, if we can all come under the one umbrella, and you know, try and make this sport much more of a success, stop it being the best kept secret and all of Christendom, you know. So go out there. I think it's exciting times ahead, yeah.
I think like a team like Guildford as well, you said of Lee Jamieson being at MK, but also you look at the Guildford lineup, they've got people who have elite league experience. It's always been seen as maybe the, you know, Tyne and Wear South, because you had the likes of Lobby going down there, Potsy going down there, and they still have, you know, Jez Lundin, Ben Campbell, Matic Kral, guys who all played for the Newcastle Vipers, guys with elite league experience. Tom Duggan playing there as well. Our own Kevin Phillips, Danny Myers. There are players there who, if they want to remain with the organisation, they'd be able to. Mike Will in goals, you know, guys who have elite league experience as a backup maybe, and would be able to make that jump should they want to when, if and when Guildford make that leap up. How it affects the dynamic of the elite league, they say that's a team coming in with maybe a little bit of cash behind them. They can bring in a few decent imports and compete. The other side of it needs to be talked about, well, maybe not for today, but in the future, is we always bemoan the fact that, you know, Brayhead and Nottingham have the same owner, but we're going to have the Milton Keynes Lightning join the elite league, and they've got the same owner as the Manchester Storm. So the dynamic in regards to ownership through the elite league is going to change, and we'll be interested how MK and Guildford compete if Guildford make the step up, which it looks likely they will when that happens. But it's good to see the league expanding. It's good to see, you know, the league looking strong. And how the conferences are set out, well, I get the feeling it could end up with us joining the Gardner Conference, but we'll see. We'll see when that decision is made. Right, time for the fan agenda in association with Belfast Giants TV. What should we be talking about? We stuck some stuff out on Twitter earlier today and we got a hell of a good response. And we'll start with Michael Owens, longtime Belfast Giants fan, at Dizzle Viper. And he says, is the Whistle Murphy tandem of suitable quality to not look out of place as a duo when compared to the ISL era net-minded duos? Aaron.
It's probably as close as we've ever been. Certainly since the inception of the Elite League, you know, we've talked many times. I think one of those areas in which the Elite League's always been a bit behind is basically the backup goalies have been kids or something who aren't expected to play, except in, you know, the case where maybe their team's nine goes up or something like that. Stephen Murphy probably, you know, if you look over his career, is probably as good as a lot of the goalies who played in the ISL days. You know, he's been and played in big leagues in Sweden and Denmark and places like that. Jackson Whistle, you know, potential there. You know, there's potential for him to either be the Giants' starting goalie for who knows how long, as long as he wants, really, or for him to move into some of the bigger leagues in Europe. But you look back to some of the goalies we had in the ISL, and I'm thinking here, Ryan Back, Mike Beals. And I think, with no disrespect, and I'm sure that, you know, Murphy and Jackson would agree, probably the level that those guys had played at prior to coming here, in fairness, they'd been in the NHL or top-end AHL for a long, long time. And I think the top-end goalies that we had then were just that little bit better than what we have at the minute. But in terms of a duo, it's a pretty impressive duo, and it's probably certainly as good as we've had in a long, long time.
David?
Yeah, it's hard to argue with much of what Aaron's saying there. You know, if you look back towards, say, you know, the early 2000s, and we had the likes of Beals and Cavi and Nets together, guys who had, as Aaron has already said, he said it all, you know, NHL careers, AHL careers, you know, top end goal. Murph's numbers stack up with all those goaltenders over the years. You know, I think he's 914, 915 over a career of almost 400 games for the Belfast Giants. So, you know, and he's played through changing times in the league. And as the league's got better, his numbers have stayed the same. He had a bit of a wobble that season that he had a bad injury. He's had a few injuries over the last number of years. But the backup in Jackson Whistle now allowing him not to have to play every game, his numbers are once again step right up. Whistle are number one and number two in the league statistically. You know, they're no mugs. On individually, they've been brilliant. Collectively, they've been really, really good this season. And, you know, are they as close? Yes, I would agree with that they are as close. But I would say that the goaltending that we had back in the day, as we like to call it, was just that level above because of where the CVs that these guys were bringing. Who knows where Jackson Whistle can go in this game? It's going to be all down to how this injury heals up for him. Stephen Murphy's won every championship going with this club and with other clubs. He's played all across Europe, and you know he's someone that whenever he's not with this club anymore, we will look back as it is a massive hole to fill.
Yeah. Okay. Let's look at one from Mark Jameson. Cardiff's ticketing process for the Challenge Cup final. Forward thinking or fleecing the fans for a few more quid? Obviously, the tickets went on sale earlier this week with regards to the Challenge Cup final being held at Ice Arena Wales. But you only had to put down £2 to book your place. They divided the arena in two. There will be 1,450 pre-bookings per team, and you were able to book up to six tickets per person at a cost of £2 for pre-booking. If your team got to the final, you get a ticket. If your team don't get to the final, then the £2 booking fee goes towards your, the cost of the webcast, so you can watch that instead. All pre-booked tickets have now sold out. David, your thoughts on that?
Clever marketing from the league there, where they're going to get some people that wouldn't buy a webcast necessarily are going to buy it. Like, would you throw £2 against the wall, hoping that it sticks and we'll come through the semi final? Personally, haven't bothered. We'll cross that bridge and we'll come to it. Wouldn't like to be so presumptuous to pay for a ticket. I'd be quite superstitious that way. Wouldn't like to, you know, hedge my bets even on getting there. I'll worry about how I get to the final once we get there, and or if we get there. Sorry. And but as I say, it's a clever. There's nothing to stop, you know, the Cardiff Devils fans buying tickets in the Sheffield Nottingham selection. There's nothing to stop those fans buying tickets in the Giants. Yeah, I'm quite surprised if there's 1,500 pre-sales from the Belfast Giants. If that's what you're saying there, that all pre-sales have sold out.
Apparently so.
I would be quite surprised that Belfast have sold 1,500 on pre-sales. But you look at that there's £6,000 there. People either pay another wee bit towards the webcast and they take those £2 off. There's going to be a surplus of a few thousand pounds there that people won't buy webcasting. You know, that's quite clever.
Well, far ahead, one's from James Trotman. Best first line is Higgins, Forney, Riley up there with Martin, Robbins, Dennisett and Ruff, Behrens. He says Ward. I think he means Real, Aaron.
Well, sir, I don't think any line that we've ever produced has been up there with the Ruff, Behrens, Real line, especially for the first the first three quarters of that second season, when the league won by, you know, Christmas pretty much. In the Elite League era, I really like it. You know, I do like what they're doing. I like the mix of guys that's on it. And I'd say that it's certainly sort of pushing towards the top end, but it's hard to compare because you have to sort of then think of what they've got supporting them. And at the minute, they've got three really good lines supporting them, whereas some of those other lines, you know, spent a lot more time on the ice because we really only played with three regular, you know, three lines and occasionally dropping down as low as two lines. So from that point of view, it's hard to compare, but I think they're certainly one of the top lines that we've had in the Elite League here.
David, you want to go with that one?
You can get blinded by, you know, what the last thing you've seen was. These are the same players that a few of these people that have been sending these questions and were asking to be sacked 3 or 4 months ago. So, you know, when you look at it like that, they're in a great vein of form. They're three fantastic players who are tanned, scoring goals, creating goals, making some lovely plays. Higgins, but you go back to, you know, Courtney, Theo, Awada, stroke Hoppy, yeah. You know, the year we had Shades and Swayze and who else played Higgy probably Higgy. On that top line for
Surette, Chevrolet.
Chevy,
Whitecotton.
Dustin Whitecotton, another fantastic guy. We've been blessed with many, many great lines throughout the time that we've had this team. But for me, Ruff, Burns, Riel are the pinnacle, and I don't think that I live long enough to see a line that can dominate any team on any night like that, that those three could put together. They were at times unplayable.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. They were absolutely phenomenal, and it goes to show that so much time has passed since the three of them played on a line that they're still held. And we do look back sometimes with a bit of overly nostalgic, but those three lads were unreal. They were just on the same page. There was the passing was crisp, the shooting was sublime, and they were just unplayable.
You go back, and Paddy, you can say it's nostalgic, and we'll look back with tinted glasses, yes, at halcyon days of yore when you'd her and I wasn't, you know.
Remember those days?
I was living in the East, and when we were in every single game, and, you know, but Jason Ruff, that will never leave me. Jason Ruff was the greatest player to ever pull that jersey over his head, and, you know, I think it would take something absolutely phenomenal. Someone that, you know, Ruff could carry a team. And he carried us in that first year in the IHL on his shoulder. He's at the guts of 90, 100 points. He just put that team on his shoulder because we were a franchise that was in trouble. We were struggling financially on off the ice. We were struggling on the ice for, you know, we brought all the young guys in, the British talent. Mo had came in, Wally had came in, Gareth Martin had came in.
Yeah.
You know, Chris McGempsey had came in. You know, we had love nostalgia. I mean, I could talk about the old days forever. But, you know, for me, Jason Ruff, I talked to Johnny over Christmas. Why Jason Ruff didn't play multiple seasons in the NHL is a mystery to him. It's a mystery to me. It's a mystery probably to Jason
Bo. Dave Whistle said as much in the View from the Bridge Live.
Yeah, Jason Ruff was an enigma. How that didn't happen, how he didn't have that career, because he had it all. He had everything you could want in a hockey player, and he just did everything well. It wasn't that he was a great goal scorer, or he was a great fighter, or he was great in defense. He just did. He ticked every box, and he did everything really well. So, you know, to go back to the Trotter's question there, you know, a line that has Jason Ruff on it has to be considered amongst the best lines that this club's ever produced.
I love doing a bit of nostalgia, mate. Well, with the three of us, and maybe a few more, maybe one of the off-season shows, we'll just have a full on. Do you remember the good old days? There are a couple of other ones come in, but some of them we can't really answer. One from Leona McClintock, you know, goal line technology, why is it yet to be installed in Belfast?
I'll have a bash at answering that. John Jones, who's the installer, has said this has nothing to do with the Belfast Giants organization. It's down to him as an installer. He's getting that worked out, so leave the organization alone. That's not me saying that. That's the installer saying that. That'll be in as soon as possible. All the equipment's there. It's down to the installer coming up with a suitable date to get over and get it done. So, Johnny, if you're listening, you know, get your finger right, big man. I know you haven't been well. I know things, issues Top are man. There. But he answered that. He came on the View from the Bridge Twitter during the week and answered. I think someone was was getting at the Giants about it and saying, you know, we needed to get our finger out, but it's down to him. He's been man enough to step up there and say that it is down to him, but he's getting it organized.
One from Joey.
I don't see it being in before the start of next season. Now,
I think we forget about GLT for the rest of this season, and we'll see it for. We'll hopefully see it at the start of next.
But as I've said on the podcast as well, if it's in an arena, turn it on.
Turn it on. Well, Todd Kelman said as much during the week. They've got it there. They've had it there for the guts of 2 years, and they just can't use it. Gilly Truan, justification for the lack of home games next Christmas due to the SSE Panto. Obviously, this week, we've seen that the SSE are putting a Panto on for the guts of 3 weeks, I think, across December. That's obviously going to have its effect when next year's fixtures come out. Can't really talk about that because we don't know how that's going to affect regards to the season. We have had times before where we've had long stretches of time, you know, Mamma Mia being on at the SSE.
Let's add in also last weekend in November, Friendship 4. So you're looking from sort of mid-November to just post-Christmas that we're probably going to be on the road unless we're going back to Dundonald. I can't see that happening. But, you know, can't see the second ice pad being open for next year either. So, you know, it's one of those things. The arena teams have that challenge that they have to find ice time when it's available. So big road trip, big road swing coming up next year. It's galvanized teams. The year Paul Eady was here, it galvanized us. We had that long swing this year as well, which I think that the team picked up a lot of points there on that road swing as well. So it brings teams together as well. So it's not all bad.
Yeah, there's obviously going to have to be we've had long road swings of the last couple of years, like you say, 8, 9, 10 games on the road out of, or maybe 8 games out of 12 on the road. That's what happens. We had it the year we won the league with Theo Fleury. We had a Mamma Mia in and we had to front load all of our fixtures. The fact that this comes into the SSE doesn't mean that we lose out on fixtures. We'll still have those fixtures, just how they'll be spread out through the season. We can't answer that at the moment. But yeah, and a few others coming in, but we're going to batter ahead, lads, because we've been talking for over an hour, as we usually do, and we've got one more thing to deal with. Thanks to everybody for your fan agendas. Keep them coming through the week at AVFTB on Twitter, hashtag TFA. What a weekend we have ahead of us. The Belfast Giants are on the road. 2 games at the Sheffield Arena to take on third place Sheffield Steelers. Second against third in Elite League competition. 3 points between these two sides. Saturday at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 5 p.m. The Sheffield Steelers, 7 wins from their last 10 Elite League games. They've got a 3-2 record over the Belfast Giants this season. And in their own arena, they have a 2-0 record over the Giants. Both those games were 5-1 wins for the Steelers. Aaron, I think earlier on we heard Adam Keefe said it is a big weekend. It's all big weekends. Every weekend's a big weekend, to quote Gary Jackson, but this is a big weekend.
Oh, yeah, and they just keep rolling around, you know. Even going back to, you know, the Cardiff doubleheader a few weeks back, you know, that was probably the start of the real run-in, and now we've another one, and it's on the road this time. And it's massive, you know. We've got to come out of this weekend with probably, we need to at least, you know, it's a road weekend, and we always say that points on the road are sort of a bonus. You aim to win a majority of your home games and you look to pick up whatever points you can on the road. But when you're facing, you know, an opposition team, I think it's one of those weekends. If we can match the points that the Steelers get, I think it will be a successful week. But I would like, you know, hopefully we can do better than that. If we can pick up a win and a, you know, a third point, or, you know, and basically make up a point on the Steelers, as it were, I think that would be a fantastic weekend if we can win both games. And there's no reason why we can't the way that we're playing, even better.
David, we know the Steelers are strong. We know the fact that they're obviously in the chase. If they win these two games, they will usurp us and they will go into second, or depending on how Cardiff get on. So they'll be up for it as well as we are.
Another pivotal weekend, will we call it that? You know, yeah. we haven't had the greatest success in the House of Ten over the last couple of seasons, and you know, Derek Walser's team's playing a lot better now than perhaps it was at the last time we were in Sheffield. So, you know, I'm hopeful. I hate this part of the show, I really do. I know I've done it 150 times.
You try to be optimistic, you try to say something different, but it's difficult.
You try to say something different every week, but you can't really. We've just got to come out for best foot forward. We've got to come out and play the system that we know we can. We've got to be good on the special teams. we've got to shoot the puck, you know, all the basics of hockey. We've got to get out there and just do it.
What about Sheffield, though? Where are the dangers coming from, Sheffield?
All over the place. I think they're a team that's stacked with talent. Armstrong's obviously a great, you know, ally for them. Matthew Waugh would grace any team in the league and score goals for them. And in nets, you know, Mr. Coves is still that 920 goaltender that we knew he would be at the start of the season. So it's getting one past him. It's getting rubber on him and crashing for those rebounds. Like we did on the goal, Mika Vikman at the weekend. We got shots and we had people following in for rebounds. We got goals in those dirty areas. You know, I always heart back, would be nostalgic again. Do you remember the time we stood in Ice Sheffield and we just couldn't get that garbage goal past Mustakovs when he won them the title that night? We beat Sheffield that night. We go on and we win the league. Couldn't get past Mustakovs because we wouldn't go into that blue paint. We couldn't get that garbage goal. We got a few of those at the weekend. The bouncing pucks around the net. Demarais scooped the one in. Rutherford gets one in. Vandermeer's getting that bomb away from the point. Walser's getting that bomb away from the point. So I'm confident going into the weekend. But, you know, the last two scenes have told me that all of a sudden, a good performance in the House of Steel, which, excuse me, we have put up two good performances already this season, and we came out in the end 5-1 defeat. You know, we have to get goals when we're on top. We have to, you know, turn that into goals and ultimately into points. Would I take an overtime split each way the weekend? Yeah, I would. I would take an overtime win and an overtime loss.
Yeah, it was an interesting season. That season, I remember those games really, really well, and we ended up only 1 point. I think that was the year the Sheffield Steelers won the league on regulation wins. I'm just looking up that league table there. 43 wins to Cardiff's 42 wins, both on 87 points, and the Belfast Giants were on 86 points. So even one win in those two games at Ice Sheffield would have won the Belfast Giants the league. And that's, you know, hard to take when you look back. Talking about nostalgia. That's one way I think of myself. Yeah, we were
dominant that night. And that's the big guy, Kasper Zashchenko, played for us that year as well. Sadly, no longer with us. Another blast from the past. But, you know, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. You know, once you've lost, it's lost. You just have to move forward.
Absolutely. With those two games, massive games, Sheffield Steelers, I know there's a massive away support travelling over. You see it all over Twitter. Everybody's really looking forward to Belfast Giants fans. Boomerang Corner will no doubt be in full voice for the entire weekend. I say a louder voice on Saturday than maybe on Sunday, but that's due to various other reasons, no doubt. Pop World, I believe, is the venue of choice. However, yes. Game on Saturday, 7 p.m. Game on Sunday, 5 p.m. Possible webcasts. We know that they're doing it on a case-by-case basis. And given what Dave Sims said about Belfast, who knows what they'll think about putting on a webcast. If there are webcasts, we'll give you all the details at AVFTB on Twitter. And yep, definitely looking forward to those games this weekend. And with the lack of any other business, gentlemen.
Nothing from me.
No, that's it. Okay. Well, then we'll just say thanks to Adam Keefe for joining us. Thanks to you two gents, as always, for joining us and chatting about this weekend's games. And thanks to everybody for listening in. Get in touch with us at AVFTB on Twitter, podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com for any emails. The emails have dried up. Come on, give us a couple more. Send them in. We've got Instagram with Jimmy Squeaker's photographs. We've got soundcloud.com/AVFTB for all the interviews and stuff like that. And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey, and we'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge.